Here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 12th of September, 2013. It's the birthday of the man who asked that his epitaph read, "If after I depart this veil you ever remember me and have thought to please my ghost, forgive some sinner and wink your eye at some homely girl." Henry Louis Mencken, H.O. Mencken, born in Baltimore on this day in 1880. Popular journalist of his day, wrote about con artists and attacked chiropractors in the Ku Klux Klan, and most of all attacked Puritan morality. He called Puritanism the haunting fear that someone somewhere may be happy. And he wrote a book called The American Language, came out in 1919, a history and collection of American vernacular speech. It's the birthday of the publisher Alfred A. Knopf, New York City, 1892. Started his publishing house when he was 23 years old. He became the publisher of Franz Kafka, Sigmund Freud, D.H. Lawrence, James Baldwin, Theodore Dreiser, Langston Hughes, and his favorite of all his authors was Willa Cather. It's the birthday of the author of The English Patient, Michael Ondaatje, born in Colombo, Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, 1943, grew up in an English colonialist family. The English Patient, set in Tuscany at the end of World War II, about the relationship between a mysterious, badly burned patient and his nurse. And it's the anniversary of the Battle of Marathon, took place on this date in the year 490 B.C. King Darius I of Persia was determined to crush the cities of Athens and Eretria because they had burned the Persian city of Sardis to the ground. He wanted revenge. He sent his armada to capture Eretria, and then his forces moved on toward Athens. The two armies met across the plain of Marathon. The Athenians, outnumbered by the Persians, they were hoping for reinforcements from Sparta to arrive. The Athenians defeated the Persians in a rout, and a Greek messenger named Pheidippides ran the 26 miles from Marathon to Athens to bring the news of the victory, and collapsed and died when he got there. That was the legend anyway. And it was from his run that the organizers of the first Olympic Games in 1896 came up with the idea of a commemorative race, which they called a marathon. Here's a poem for today by Dr. Adam Posner, entitled A Podiatry Fairy Tale. This little piggy went to market, this little piggy stayed home, and this little piggy, well, he's sick, poor guy, got a case of the fungus, big bad trichophaton, blue hyphae, under his nail, turned it to porridge, ragged like a witch's tooth or hunchback trowel, hard as an unkissed toad, probably caught it from someone's slipper, the crystal ball of randomized, controlled, double-blind trials, shows half of such nails will magically change from ugly duckling to sleeping beauty by the stroke of 12 weeks of Lamisil taken orally. It's no genie in a bottle, no knight in shining armor, just your best chance for a happy ending. A Podiatry Fairy Tale by Dr. Adam Posner, used by permission of the poet here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Quercus, publisher of the new thriller Alex by Pierre Lumaitre, where even the killer isn't safe. In bookstores everywhere, Quercus, stories worth reading, books worth recommending. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor here on the Jefferson Exchange with today's edition of the Writer's Almanac, a regular feature of the Jefferson Exchange. It's 8:41 on The Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Here's your daily reminder. You can find us on the web in addition to on the air. We maintain our website at jeffexchange.org with program topics and recordings and a look ahead to the next edition of the Jefferson Exchange. You'll also find us on Facebook. If you're a Facebook member and like us on Facebook, our information ends up on your news feed on a daily basis, and the same stuff we send to Facebook goes on to Twitter as well. So jeffexchange.org, Facebook, and Twitter, all places to find the Jefferson Exchange online. You can also take part in our conversations as they happen. Phone numbers here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. The name alone is like a boy child's dream, Stinkbug. We'll get to why they bear that name shortly. The current issue is not that stink bugs exist, but that they exist in a number of species, including some that are not native to our region. And if you're thinking one stink bug is very like another, it's time to think again. People who know stink bugs and what they are capable of are concerned about the invasive versions, which appear to be growing in number in parts of our region. We have two researchers with us from the Oregon State University Horticulture Department. Chris Hedstrom is with us. Chris, welcome.
Good morning.
And Nick Wyman is with us as well. Welcome, Nick.
Hi, thanks.
So, gentlemen, start with the easy stuff, and I'm not sure who wants to go first here. Why are they called stink bugs?
I'll handle this. They're called stink bugs because when they're disturbed or threatened in any way, they'll release a stinky compound that not only smells bad but also tastes bad to any would-be predator.
Is this the kind of thing that ever particularly bothers humans? I mean, as long as I've been around stink bugs, I can't remember ever actually having noticed anything from them.
When you get them on by the individual, not really. You know, they might smell a little bit, but when you get them in the numbers, like we're starting to see these brown marmorated stink bugs, then they can become a real problem, especially in people's houses.
And so the native stink bugs in our region, how do they fit into the ecosystem? What do they do? Who's their prey? Who's their predator?
In terms of the native stink bugs, they fit in like a lot of other herbivorous insects. They feed on plants and they provide food for a lot of different types of birds and other small mammals. We also have predatory stink bugs that feed on a lot of pest species. They actually attack other insects. So it's not entirely known how they fit into the ecosystem, but like anything else, they feed on plants and have their role.
Are they not especially destructive, then, to crops in the region or ornamental plants?
In our region, we don't have any major stink bug pests, but that's not true of other regions. In the southern United States and in other states, stink bugs can be a huge problem on cotton and tree nuts and small fruits and tree fruits.
And so what are the varieties that we have in the region to begin with?
There's at least 55 different species that we have in our collection at Oregon State and that ODA has in their collection that's been found all over the state. That could be a low number because not a lot of people were studying stink bugs before, so there could be more than we know about, but at least 55 species across the state.
And so why are they of greater interest now? We have different stink bugs coming into the region?
Yeah. We have a new invasive in our region called brown marmorated stink bug, Haliomorpha halus, and it's got no natural enemies here and is able to just thrive in the region. And it's posing a threat to a lot of different small crops and crops, and especially crops that we grow in the region.
So marmorated, what does marmorated mean?
It just means marbled. Basically, I don't know if you'll hear that word anywhere else other than in entomology, but kind of means brown or mottled or spotted.
Okay, not the kind of thing you're going to hear in the meat department. That meat is well marmorated or something like that.
Yeah, I hope not. That,
yeah. All right, so Nick Wyman, what is the name for the invaders that are coming into the brown marmorated we got, but where are they coming from?
Well, we've had them in the northern Willamette Valley in Portland since at least 2004. At least that's when it was first recognized, and it appears that it spread southward, but also it may be coming from the California side as well. So last year, just a couple appeared down in Jackson County. But suddenly there we have a lot more. So there, certainly the I-5 corridor is a major factor for how they're getting spread through Oregon.
Do they travel actually on vehicles in the I-5 corridor?
They really do, yeah. This stink bug is known for its ability to hitchhike, so it'll travel on vehicles. It really likes RVs. In fact, we found some RV parks that have huge populations of these stink bugs, and we've actually had people, you know, come to us and say, hey, I opened this door in my RV, and, you know, I had 50 marmorated stink bugs in there, and they can remember exactly when they picked them up, you know, the previous year at an RV park. So that's a major factor. Also, we think the trains are moving around, too, quite a bit.
It sounds almost like a land-based version of the quagga and zebra mussels that we're concerned are going to hitchhike on a boat into the state of Oregon, but it sounds like you'd have to put on a massive effort to try to stop them from coming up on vehicles.
Yeah, it's absolutely impossible to stop. And also we found that they're quite strong flyers, and they can fly, you know, 50 kilometers in a day is not that unheard of for these.
It's a good long distance, 31 miles in a day then. Okay, so we're talking to Nick Wyman and Chris Hedstrom, both researchers in the Oregon State University Horticulture Department. We're talking about non-native stink bugs, the brown marmorated stink bugs beginning to show up in many parts of the region. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions or comments. Perhaps you've seen some of them, or maybe they're doing some damage on your plants already. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Chris Hedstrom, how is the brown marmorated stink bug's behavior different from that of the native stink bugs?
I'm not sure that its behavior is specifically different, other than it's just, it's really adaptive. It can kind of get into any situation and thrive, is what we're finding. It doesn't have any other natural enemies, so nothing's really feeding on it yet that we've seen. And so it's able to sort of take over and get into any place it wants to and sort of muscle out all the other stink bugs.
And when you
I
say...
make a comment there?
Go ahead, Nick.
One of the major differences with marmorated stink bugs that is not seen in other stink bugs is that it will get in these massive aggregations, and they actually overwinter in houses. And so one of the things that does is it gets them kind of out of the elements in the winter. So there may not be as much winter mortality as there would be with other stink bugs, because they're actually getting into these houses during the winter.
Oh, interesting. So the native stink bugs...
That's where the nuisance problems come in for homeowners as well, because they... In the fall, we have these massive aggregations on houses, and the stink bugs are coming in through the cracks, and they'll come under doors, and they try to work their way in through windows and vents and basically anywhere they can get in. And then they kind of buzz around inside the house all winter.
You're making this sound like Night of the Living Dead. They're trying to get in like the zombies in every crevice here, but it sounds like that is what they do. So what should a homeowner do if they think they've got brown marmorated stink bugs versus the other kind? And how easy or hard is it to tell them apart, Nick?
It's relatively easy, and we have some resources on our website, which is bmsb.hort.oregonstate.edu. We have a lot of good tutorial resources for determining the species. And also, we encourage people, especially in Southern Oregon, to report suspected infestations to us at bmsb@oregonstate.edu. And so we get a lot of reports from the known range of the stink bug right now. So we get tons of reports from the Portland area. Those are they're all interesting. We always appreciate whatever information people provide to us, but we'd especially like to hear from these regions such as Southern Oregon, where there aren't as many stink bugs.
All right, and what was that address again, BMSB?
Yeah, bmsb@oregonstate.edu is the report line.
Okay.
Report line, and it always helps if people can send a photo attached to their report, even if it's just from a cell phone.
Okay. Brown marmorated stink bugs. Okay.
Whether they do, in fact, have BMSB.
All right. So we'll provide a more direct link to that. And it says bmsb@oregonstate.edu.
Yes.
All right. We'll put that on our Facebook page. And how then, Chris, is the brown marmorated stink bug dealt with? And what can be done to get it under control?
In terms of houses, for homeowners and things like that, it's going to going to be the same sort of things you're going to use to keep other things out of your house. Like Nick was saying, they get into crevices and cracks, and they sort of invade homes. So if you can seal off any of those cracks and check, you know, around windows and in your attics especially is where they like to overwinter, get in and seal any cracks that you can. If you suspect that they're going to get in or just want to prevent that, that's good for any other pests, too, in your home. In terms of control on, you know, in gardens and things like that, I can't make any recommendations in terms of sprays or anything, but maybe Nick has more to add about homeowner and pest control in that aspect.
Yeah, because I'm sure people are going to ask about sprays, particularly in agricultural applications, and I don't know if there's anything out there available for them. Nick?
Yes, there are some things. They tend to be sort of, they're not usually the softest chemicals that we have in our arsenal, and that's really the scary thing about this these new invasive pests is they're kind of taking us back to pest management and the tools that we have available. So both Chris and I, we work as part of a multi-state national, nationally funded specialty crop research grants. And so we are partnered with institutions that are back east that are seeing the huge economic impacts in their crops. And it's really amazing the amount of applications of some fairly harsh chemicals that are needed to bring these insects under control. And so that's our major concern, is that we're actually kind of losing ground in our battle to reduce insecticide use with these invasive pests. That's always a problem. When invasives come in, we don't have the tools available to manage them effectively.
You know, I was looking at the website for Penn State University yesterday, noticing a similar concern about the brown marmorated stink bug. So they really have kind of laid waste to some crops in the east and south, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Huge economic impact.
All right. Let us take a call. We are talking to Chris Hedstrom and Nick Wyman about brown marmorated stink bugs, or BMSB, as we've gotten to get familiar with them. John and Eugene is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I wish they would, your guests would speak a little bit about the problem that so often occurs when there's publicity about a pest. The public reacts by killing the wrong critters, like the hobo spider controversy or the Asian longhorn beetle. People run out and kill the alder borer. The public is ready and willing to do inappropriate things from lack of guidance, maybe. So the stink bug that I love is the predatorial one that I think of or know of as Brachymanos.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem here is that the marmorated stink bug looks somewhat like, you know, in some coloration like the Brachymanos. So that to me is a big problem. You're going to activate some interest here, but people aren't going to have enough wits about them to kill the appropriate bug if the situation arises. Can you speak to that?
All right. Thanks for that, John. Chris, want to take that on?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think identification is one of the major problems with pests, especially new invasives, even on our end, on the research end. Identifying a new invasive is absolutely important because we don't know, you know, what we've got. But on the public side, it's even a lot harder because the public isn't experts at insect ID, and it can be really difficult. In terms of the stink bug, you're right. Brachymina looks almost exactly like brown marmorated stink bug. It has the same mottled appearance. There's a couple of key differences between that species and BMSB, and a couple of sort of identifying characteristics that we like to point out to the public for BMSB. It's the brown shield-shaped insect, like any other stink bug, but there's these distinctive white bands on the antenna. And another key characteristic difference between Brachymina and brown marmorated stink bug is these sort of smooth shoulders on the BMSB, whereas Brachymina has a rough appearance on its shoulder, sort of this toothed area on the front of its body. Another resource you can use is actually on our website on the bmsb.hort.oregonstate.edu. there's a gallery, not of every single species that we've got in Oregon, but of quite a few of them that you can use to sort of do a quick identification if you're not sure. If you've caught a stink bug and want to check it against our pictures, there's a lot of resources online as well. Bugguide.net is a really great resource for insect ID. And then you can send it to us also if you're not sure. So there's a couple of resources available, but you're right, identification is absolutely key to stopping the right critter.
All right, and we did just put a link up on Facebook to the BMSB site at horticulture.oregonstate.edu. It's a long URL, but they can find it directly through our Facebook page. So again, it's the white stripes on the antenna and smooth shoulders do identify the BMSB?
Yeah, that's the characteristics we generally point out.
So, Nick Wyman, what kinds of crops do they appear to be developing an interest in Oregon?
Well, of course, we grow such a diversity of what we call specialty crops. And these include hazelnuts and wine grapes and tree fruits, of course, are a huge concern down in Jackson County. And then we also have all the cane berries and small fruits. So all of those are a huge concern for us.
Is this pretty much everything west of the Cascades at this point now?
Yes, they're now found, we have established populations in all the counties of the Willamette Valley, and we now regard the populations in Jackson County to be established, and new this year we found them in Douglas County, so that's a concern for the Umpqua winemakers. And then they're also starting to move up into the Columbia Gorge, and even way out in eastern Oregon and Union County, we have a population now that's really well established.
Wow, they really do travel. It sounds like we are not talking about the possibility of eradication, Chris Hedstrom, or it's really more like just learning how to live with the brown marbleated stink bug?
Yeah, eradication of any invasive is incredibly difficult, and so it's more of you want to look at it from a management perspective and what kind of, how can we live with this and how can we control it in a you know, safe and efficient way.
All right, well, you heard it here, the brown marmorated stink bug on the grow in the region. Chris Hedstrom and Nick Wyman, both researchers in the Oregon State University Horticulture Department, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks very much.
All right, a lesson in BMSB here on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for listening. We'll come back in hour number two and talk about possible options for American involvement, if any, in Syria.